Last week, we have introduced the accelerometers as very interesting transducers that provide the measurement of the acceleration that is independent on the particular reference system into which the measurement is taken. Among them, the first device that we took into account was the so-called moving mass accelerometer that was made by a mobile part and a movement that is damped by a piston and kept in limited oscillation by the presence of a suitable spring. The transfer function of the accelerometer was basically related to the couple of poles, complex and conjugates that correspond to the resonance frequency of the transducer equal to the square root of the ratio between the elastic constant of the spring and the mass. But basically, the idea is that the accelerometer is used only in the part of the frequency range that is that corresponds to a constant gain. The part into which the gain is not constant diminishes with a slope equal to 40 dB per decade, and the part that even corresponds to an overshooting is accurately avoided in the processes to which this kind of transducer is applied. For those processes that feature, let's say, small oscillations around a rest position and whose frequency are not so high, we can take into account a device that provides a transfer function that is definitively constant at all frequencies, and in output a voltage that is suitable for the measurement through an analog digital converter, and then is suitable to be sent to a microprocessor, and that it is also very interesting because presents to us the idea of a ring into which the feedback taken by the measurement of a suitable process variable is used to power supply an actuator, and the manipulated variable of this actuator keep the process, in this case an oscillating mass, under control. This together the possibility of measuring directly from the accelerometer the acceleration that the object is subject to. I'm referring to slide 33. This transducer is called servo accelerometer. I want to highlight the word servo because it is directly related to the idea of a feedback control, and it is very, very close to those issues that we will see in the final part of the course when we will deal with the control algorithms theory. You see in the figure that the system is equipped with a mass that can oscillate due to the acceleration of the object on which the accelerometer is mounted. The acceleration is performed on a linear direction, that is, if we project the amplitude the arc described by the mass during its own oscillation. On a ground, we have a line. So the measurement is taken by a linear position transducer that should be able to detect both movements towards a, let's say, positive direction and movements towards a negative directions, considering the rest, the steady position of the mass when it is fixed as the reference point, the origin, let's say, of the movements. If these are the conditions of the measurement, it is clear that the best candidate for such a kind of acquisition is the so-called differential transducer based on the electromagnetic coupling of a moving magnet with respect to solenoidal circuits connected in opposition of a phase. We remember that the output of such a kind of transducer is given in alternate current, so we need a rectifier. And then, looking again at the figure, we see a block that is called AG, that is a transconductance amplifier that transforms the voltage given by the rectifier into a current. This current crosses a resistor, and the voltage that can be taken on the resistor itself will give an evaluation of the acceleration that is responsible of the mass movement. The current exiting from the transconductance amplifier is given to feed, to supply a torque motor that rotates a shaft connected to arm at the edge of which we have the oscillating mass. The movement that the motor exerts, the rotation that the motor exerts with the shaft is conceived so as it tries to keep the mass fixed in the original position. That is, the rotation is done oppositely with respect to the oscillation that the mass should do. In other words, the motor will exert a torque that is in opposition to the moment that characterizes the oscillating mass. Into a motor, the torque is given by the product of a suitable characteristic of the motor itself, Km, times the current with which the motor is supplied. On the other hand, the torque that is applied to the mass M is the product of the force through which the mass oscillates times the arm that characterize the distance of the mass from the point of application of the force itself, that is the junction between the arm and the shaft of the motor. In ideal conditions, we can balance the two quantities, the two expressions that we have determined, that is Km times I equal to MAL. M is the mass, A is the acceleration, L is the arm. So, shifting to slide 44, we can evaluate in such a way the voltage drop that we can measure in output at the extremities of the resistor R. This voltage is given by the product of the resistor times the current. The current is the ratio between the torque and the motor characteristic Km, and by replacing the value of the torque with the mass, the acceleration, and the arm, we obtain a very polite expression into which it is clear the linear relationship between the voltage we acquire we can read at the extremities of the resistor, and the physical magnitude that we want to measure, that is the acceleration. The sensibility of the transducer is given by the product of the mass, the resistor, the arm, and the constant of the motor. Of course, the most suitable among these values to be modified for adapting the sensibility is the electric component, that is the resistor. Basically, we can say that such a kind of answer is constant at all the frequencies. This is typically true. To be honest, we have to observe that we have introduced a torque motor, and as all the motors that we will see, even in this case, we have a limited response in frequency, that is, even the motor has a pole, has a cutoff frequency, but at those frequencies at which typically this accelerometer is used, such a kind of cutoff basically doesn't work, is not at all influencing the physical phenomenon that we are measuring. We have introduced at the beginning of the description of such a kind of transducer a general idea that associated the servo mechanism to a feedback control ring. Basically, we have an object that is moving and another architecture, another system that is in opposition to this movement, and finally more or less damps this movement until it stops it more or less, let's say, in a short time. In other words, we could say that the remaining part of the transducer, made up by the electronic components and the motor itself, act like a spring that will stop within a certain interval of time the oscillation of the mass itself. Let's try to evaluate the sensibility of such a kind of spring. Probably it is better to say let's evaluate the elasticity constant of such a kind of spring to understand first of all how this transducer works and where to modify or where to pay attention if we wanted to shorten or allow the mass to prolong its own oscillations. Talking about an elasticity constant, we know from the Hooke law that it is given by the ratio between a force and the linear movement, the linear displacement that the elastic object makes under the action of such a kind of a force. In the particular system that we are considering, we can express this force as the product of the displacement measured by the transducer, its own sensibility, the gain of the transconductance amplifier, and the product of the ratio between the constant in the motor and the arm. This chain of calculations is given by, let's say, a road that we can make by following the succession of the components along the transducer itself. I mean, if we consider the movement, the displacement made by the mass and detected by the transducer, the x, by multiplying it by the sensibility of the transducer, we will obtain a voltage. The product of this voltage with the gain of the transconductance amplifier will give us a current. And if we multiply the current for the characteristic of the motor, this current is the same current that we provide to the motor, with which I mean we feed the motor, we will obtain a torque. And the ratio of this torque by the arm is the force that the motor develops to keep more or less fixed the mass in its steady position. So from the logic point of view and also from the dimensional point of view, the chain made up by all these gains, all these components, really corresponds to a force. The ratio keeps the delta x displacement that can be, let's say, eliminated because there is an equal term in the numerator of the ratio. So we remain at the end with the product of the sensibility time the gain of the amplifier time the ratio of the characteristic of the motor divided by the arm. This is the set of parameters on which we can work to adapt the sensibility of the spring, the damping factor of the spring that opposes to the oscillation of the mass itself. And it is clear that, again, we can use some of them to extend the amplitude of the oscillation or make it very short. For example, we can modify the sensibility of the transducer, that is, we can choose a differential linear position transducer into which, let's say, the magnetic coupling between the primary solenoid circuit, the second one, together with the magnet, can be changed during the measurement campaign. Change means more or less to change the inductors and in particular the number of the coils by which they are made of. A second idea could be to act on the gain of the transconductance amplifier, that is modifying basically the gain of the amplifier itself. In slide 33, we didn't go too much into the details, but it is clear that that symbol will contain an amplifier with a suitable set of resistors whose ratio is the gain of the stage itself. And finally, we can adapt, let's say, the length of the arm, just to modify again the elasticity constant. This is not, let's say, a very suitable modification because modifying the arm will influence the overall constant into a non-linear way, and typically this is not what we like. As well as theoretically we could modify the KM characteristic of the motor, in practice we can't, because this means basically to change the motor. Other operations onto such a kind of device clearly are not possible. So, just to conclude, we can say that several parameters allow to modify the sensibility. The most suitable one is the resistor R. Someone can also want to modify the constant relative to the virtual spring we have defined, the elasticity constant, and we see that it is possible to modify such a kind of constant without affecting the sensibility and vice versa, and this is clearly important. Moreover, there are no damping oscillations. I mean that the components can be more easily controlled. In normal condition, finally, the parts of the transducer are fixed, that is, are located in steady position, and this provides a better linearity. This in particular is true for the oscillating mass, whose steady position can be considered as the origin of the movement, let's say the zero point, and clearly this is a condition for the linearity very good. And also the amplitude of the movements can be considered linear with respect to such a kind of reference point. This is only in part true, or better, this is true only if the amplitude of the oscillation of the mass is not wide, because the movement, the displacement that the transducer is able to detect is linear, and the projection of an arc of oscillation, of rotation, I mean, onto a linear axis is affected by a small error if the amplitude of the rotation is small and not wide. The linear position transducer is therefore linear if we consider small movements of the mass. Finally, this kind of transducer is not very convenient to be used at high frequencies that are close to the megahertz. In this case, we have to refer to a completely different technological point of view, and in particular to accelerometers based on the piezoelectric ceramic. Piezoelectric accelerometer can be considered as a moving mass accelerometer without a damping piston. Piezoelectric accelerometer is made of a box into which a piezoelectric ceramic is inserted together with a moving mass. The piezoelectric ceramic is fixed, instead the mass is able to move accordingly to the acceleration to which the object that is under measurement is subject. Due to the acceleration, the mass compresses the piezoelectric ceramic, and as we will see later with more details, it generates a voltage that can be measured. Consider that the shape of the envelope of the box into which the ceramic and the mass are inserted is, let's say, like a parallelepiped. In other words, the box into which the measurement mechanism is inserted features a preferred direction, that is also the direction into which the acceleration will be measured. We can say, in other words, that due to the shape of the box, the longitudinal component of the acceleration will be preferably measured. Considering the equation of the moving mass accelerometer, we have to drop out the damping factor. This means that considering A as the acceleration of the object under measurement, we can write M times A, the Newton force, equal to minus M times the second derivative of the internal displacement of the mass, minus the elasticity constant Kp times the displacement in itself. X is the displacement of the mass relative to the reference system internal to the box. And when we say the elasticity constant Of course, we refer to the spring that was present into the moving mass accelerometer. In this case, the elasticity factor is the compression factor relative to the piezoelectric ceramic we have inserted into the transducer. The solution of such a kind of equation, second rank in X, will allow us to write that the relationship between X and A is, again, like before, minus M divided by K time 1 ratio 1 plus M on the elasticity constant time S squared. That is, while before we had a couple of poles that were complex and conjugate, in this case we have a resonance factor that is equal to the square root kp on m, and the transfer function of this kind of equation with respect to the frequency will feature a divergent term towards infinite. In other words, we don't have overshooting, but we have a range of frequencies into which the gain is out of control. Another set of frequencies are corresponding to a gain that is not constant, so we have to work with such a kind of accelerometer in the part into which the gain is constant. Luckily, this part corresponds to very high frequencies. We can reach 100 kHz and more, and this is the reason why this is the suitable accelerometer for very high frequency components of the acceleration. The gain of the transducer itself is given, as before, by the ratio between the mass and the compression factor, let's say, of the piezoelectric ceramic that we have chosen. And this is also the sensibility of the transducer that clearly is mainly influenced by the characteristic, the geometric characteristic of the mass that we are using for the movement inside to the box, since the piezoelectric ceramic, once you have chosen it, that's it. You cannot change the compression factor. To understand how the transducer works, it is necessary to recover some basic principles about the piezoelectric effect. First of all, the definition. Piezoelectric is a material that, when compressed, produces a measurable voltage in output that typically can be put in a linear relationship with the compression factor, the compression effect, or vice versa, when subject to an external electric field gets deformed. This is the so-called reversibility of the piezoelectric effect that, as we have seen, goes in twice the directions, from the compression to the electronic measurement, and from the electronic effect toward a modification into the shape. Typical materials that are characterized by this behavior are the titanate of barium or the piezo-laid zirconate titanate. If we go inside the matter, we can appreciate a piezoelectric crystal as a lattice where oxygen atoms are located into the vertices, metals atoms are located into the centers of each face, and a heavy atom is located into the center of the crystal itself, that correspond to the position with minimum energy, so the, let's say, most natural one. This structure, however, is metastable, that is very easy to be modified, to be destroyed. In other words, it is sufficient that an external electrical field is provided, is present, so as the heavy atom located into the center of the crystal moves from its own steady position and causes an imbalance that transforms the crystal into an electric dipole. This phenomenon can be detected when the temperature is, let's say, low, or in any case below a threshold that is called Curie temperature, from the name of the famous researcher Marie Curie, who discovered such a kind of effect. Above this threshold, the thermal agitation makes it to disappear. In other words, you know that when the temperature is high, the atoms tend to oscillate around their equilibrium positions, and when the temperature goes very, very, very high, they escape from their position, and a lot of strange effects will take origin. So increasing the temperature clearly prevent from influencing the electrical state of the piezoelectric crystal, but under such a kind of temperature, this behavior can be provoked by a suitable electric field. After having shown that inside the piezoelectric materials some dipolar molecules are present, let's see now how this property can be used to obtain anisotropic materials. Looking at slide 38, in nature, piezoelectric materials don't have a preferred orientation, so they are not able to deform, to change their shape, I mean, or to provide an electric signal if warped or compressed or subject to any kind of mechanical action. In figure 1, we see that without any treatment, the orientation of the dipoles inside the piezoelectric matter, generically speaking, is without any preferred orientation, without a common direction, let's say. On the other hand, we can warm such a kind of materials beyond the Curie temperature. In this case, the material lose the initial random orientation and are completely, let's say, reset from the electronic, from the electric point of view. That is, those are initial dipoles oriented toward north, toward south, east, and west, are completely, let's say, available for the action of an external entity. And we provide this external entity by creating an external intense electric field, and at the same time chilling the piezoelectric material, that is bringing the temperature below the Curie temperature, the Curie threshold. The electric field will exert an influence on the piezoelectric material and will orient all the dipoles in a uniform direction depending on its own intensity. That is, if the electric field is highly strong, the orientation of the dipoles will be very uniform, let's say very parallel, as shown in figure 2. Instead, if the electric field is less strong, the orientation of the dipoles will be on average the same of the electric field, but they will feature, let's say, some very small deviation on with respect to the axis that represent the direction into which the electric field is oriented, and this is shown in figure number 3. In any case, this treatment will cause a stable polarization that will turn out into an overall deformation of the material. This will correspond to a slight stretching. Typically, what it is done in the industrial applications is to create artificial piezoelectric material very similar to the one that is shown in figure number 3, so as to have margin to apply an electric field that is very intensive and increase the overall orientation of the dipoles, so to deform the material in the sense of the length. Otherwise, if we will apply an electric field less intense and perhaps oriented toward a direction that is different from the main one internal into the piezoelectric material, the material itself will assume a different shape, and the dipoles will be less oriented with respect to the original direction, and the overall shape of the material will be more rounded, more similar to a sphere. We have therefore demonstrated that it is possible to determine the overall shape of the material by means of a suitable electric field applied to it. To achieve this aim, this goal, it is however necessary to bring the piezoelectric material beyond the Curie temperature, so as the dipoles lose the memory of the previous original orientation they had. Just to help to image the situation, we can think to a certain gelatinous material or a piece of rubber into which we have inserted some small sticks. Imagine that for a certain reason the sticks initially are inserted with orientations that are different one with respect to the other, but for some other reason that for us are represented by the external electric field, the sticks will assume more or less the same direction. It is clear, if we imagine to that gelatinous substance, that due to, let's say, the internal elasticity of the material, the gel, let's say the marmalade we have considered, will more or less organize its shape in the same direction of the internal sticks, and the overall effect is an increase in the longitudinal dimension of the substance, losing of course extension in the other directions in the space. Clearly, this corresponds to a change in the overall shape and to a deformation. Coming back to our situation, this effect can be reached or can be obtained up to a certain limit value of the electric field identified with the definition of coercive field. Beyond this value, the treatment applied to the piezoelectric material will be no more effective. As we have already said, the phenomenon, or the property, is reversible. We can apply an electric, let's say, effect to the material, obtaining a result in terms of deformation, but we can also apply a mechanical action to the material itself, observing that a charge will arise on the surface of the material itself with respect, let's say, an internal electric field that will be modified by the mechanical action. This is what typically happen in very popular and useful instruments like lighters or kitchen igniter, devices that we well know in the daily life. Looking at slide 49, we can say that the electrical behavior of a material can be in general described by the following equation. The vector electric induction is given by the product between the electric constant epsilon times the electric field applied. Epsilon, as I said, is the electric constant of the medium and expresses a property of the medium into which a charge is merged, that is its capability of transmitting the influence, the attraction that the charge exerts on other charges that may pass in the space surrounding it, attraction or reaction, but in any case the electrical interaction that some materials can favor or other materials, other medium, better to say, can hinder. D is in our case the density of the distribution of charge on the surface of a conductor material that is merged into an external electric field E. Talking about mechanical actions and deformations, another equation can express such a kind of situation, that is the vector S, the tensor S of deformations, is equal to the product of the elasticity constant or Hook constant S lowercase time the tensor of the forces T. When we talk about tensors, we have in mind a free time free matrix that expresses the reaction, the response of a system into the three possible dimensions of the space when it is, let's say, excited by an input magnitude that is applied into a one only direction. So I mean that if we apply a force into the x direction, we will have a deformation that could be present not only in the same x direction, but also in the other two axes into the space. So for one action, we will have three possible responses. Of course, these responses will be weighted by suitable coefficients. These coefficients may be higher in the direction of application of the, let's say, excitation, while the other two directions could be considerably lower in terms of response. But three answers, three responses, three reactions really exist. So if we apply a mechanical action in three dimensions, I mean one on x-axis, one on y-axis, and one on z-axis, we can have three possible deformations, three possible reactions for each one of them. The overall response of the system will be represented by 9 possible terms. This explains the reason why the tensor of the deformations is a free per free matrix. In our case, for sake of simplicity, we will consider only linear deformations parallel to the electric field applied. Looking at slide 50, we can therefore say that the previously mentioned expression based on tensors will reduce to the product of scalar terms that are the value of the deformation S uppercase, the value of the elasticity constant S lowercase, and the value of T, where T is better than a force, is a pressure, that is the force exerted on a certain surface of the material that we are considering A. And continuing in this reformulation of the formula, typically S uppercase is not the value of the absolute deformation, but preferably is the percentage, the relative value of the deformation. In other words, the ratio of the change in the dimension of the material that we are considering with respect to its original length. In the slide, S corresponds to the stretching, to the extension that the material has due to the force that is applied to it, and is expressed by the ratio between the x, the variation in length, divided by L, that is the original length. What we have said till now is valid for every kind of material. But in the case of piezoelectric materials, the situation is a little bit different. That is, those charges that will accumulate on the surface of the material will be not only due to an electric field present in the material itself, but they are also due to the mechanical action that has been exerted on the material itself. This is well expressed by the new equation shown in figure 50, into which the d vector is equal to the product of epsilon times E, time the electric field as before, plus a new constant h multiplied by the vector that expresses the forces, or better, the pressures applied to the material itself. In other words, the induction of charges externally to the material is due both to its own electrical and original properties, plus what is happened inside the material itself due to the mechanical action applied to it. And since the piezoelectric effect is reversible, we have another equation with similar concepts to the previously one described. That says that the vector or the matrix of the deformations is given by the product of the elasticity constant time the forces or the pressures we applied to the material plus the action of an external electric field into which the material is merged. So the equation is S time T plus H prime time the electric field. These two equations are very interesting because fully describe the piezoelectric effect in both the directions, and I mean from the mechanical action to the electrical effect and from the electrical action to the mechanical effect. But now we have to focus on our aim, on our goal, that is to carry out a transducer based on such principles, such ideas. So now let's come back to the device we described at the beginning of this lesson, and we consider the box into which a fixed piezoelectric material is inserted together with a moving mass that moves accordingly to the acceleration of the object under measurement and on which the accelerometer is mounted. Clearly, due to the acceleration of the mass, the acceleration of the object, I mean, a certain degree of compression is exerted onto the piezoelectric material. The acceleration A will develop a force, and the force typically is expressed by the Newton law, M time A. The tensor of the pressure will be T equal to MA divided by the surface A uppercase. And this is the mechanical action that will cause a change, a modification into the internal electric field of the piezoelectric material. We have to remember that the piezoelectric material we are using undergo to a treatment that brought him below the Curie temperature and then received an external field application so as to orient the dipole and toward a certain direction so as to featuring internally a certain degree of electric field. Now, by compressing or stretching the material, we will modify that internal electric field, and we create the potential situation to have a charge distribution in the surface of the material itself. But we will not able to detect, to perceive such a kind of new distribution if we don't add on the surface suitable metal plates, we can call them plaques, that will be the seat of the new induced charges, because they are basically made of conductive material. In such a way, we have created a cylindric piezoelectric transducer equivalent from the electrical point of view to a capacitor. That is, and we will see this as an important property, it cannot work with direct current It can measure constant phenomenon, constant acceleration. How to measure the charge distribution that originates from the mechanical action on the piezoelectric material? We have two options. We can use a current amplifier, also called charge amplifier, or a voltage amplifier. This is the first time that we present a transducer together with its own electronic circuits that adapt the output of the transducer itself to the input of the following analog to digital converter that will transform the measurement into a binary number for the microprocessor. In other words, since the converter needs a voltage in input, we have to transform the charge distribution correspondent to the acceleration we want to measure into a voltage itself, and we use an electronic circuit, the so-called conditioning network. Moreover, we have also to demonstrate that the charge distribution is proportional to the physical magnitude we really want to measure. Let's see. Let's consider the first possibility using the charge amplifier. We clearly see in the figure the stage that we are using, made off by an operational amplifier that is connected to a capacitor and to a resistor in a negative reaction, and E is the electronic signal that comes from the transducer. In other words, is the voltage that will correspond to the charge distribution at the two surfaces, at the two disk plates of the transducer itself. Due to the particular configuration that we have chosen, that is, the plus input of the operational amplifier is at the ground, and due to the virtual mass principle, also the minus, the negative input, is at the same voltage, we can say that the input impedance of the operational amplifier is null since the two inputs are at the same voltages. Since the two inputs more or less are connected to the two plugs, to the two external surfaces of the transducer, to say this is equivalent to say that the two plugs, the two surfaces, are connected at the same potential. So the external electric field that we observe in steady conditions when the mass is at rest is equal zero, because the two surfaces can be considered as they are in a short circuit. No signal can be observed, in other words, in static conditions. But when the mass moves itself inside the box and collides with one of the surfaces of the piezoelectric material, when it pushes it, distribution of charge in the surface arises, and this voltage can be measured by the microprocessor, since it will be present in the resistor and it will accumulate on the capacitor C. In other words, if we would observe the development of the signal with an oscilloscope, we would see a horizontal line in steady conditions, maybe corresponding to 0 volt, for example. Then, during the movement, we will see a signal that is different from zero and moves and goes up, goes to toward positive values. And finally, when the movement has finished, will become zero again. That is, the signal will be in the same situations as at the beginning. But of course, we can detect, we can sample the phase into which the signal was different from zero. We can store it into a file, and we can then process, elaborate it to understand what kind of acceleration characterized the accelerometer and, of course, the object on which it is mounted. Okay, so the only charge measurable variation is that due to the mechanical effect when this effect is present. This means, referring to the equations that we have previously written, that the induction vector D is equal, in this case, only to the product of the constant H times the vector of the pressures, that is, H that multiplies the force due to the mass times the acceleration divided by the surface A uppercase. And this equation demonstrates the relationship, the direct relationship between the electronic effect and the physical magnitude that we want to measure, since we have already D, that is an electronic magnitude, related linearly related to the mechanical magnitude A, that is the acceleration. We know that the quantity of the charge that is accumulated on the surface of the transducer can be expressed by the product of the induction D times the surface A uppercase. So this quantity is directly proportional to the acceleration. Q is equal to H times the mass times the acceleration. The current that will be measured by the amplifier will be integrated to obtain the charge Q. This justifies the presence of the capacitor C in reaction to the operational amplifier. In other words, the current that crosses the resistor and the charge the capacitor C will be integrated. We know that the transfer function of a capacitor is an integral function, and the charge accumulated, stored, let's say, in some sense, on the surfaces of the capacitor will be Q equal the integral I delta T dt. And we have already said that this charge is proportional to the acceleration that we want to measure. This expression shows once more that this accelerometer cannot be used to measure constant accelerations. In fact, constant accelerations corresponds to have S, I mean the frequency, equal to zero. And this will in turn imply that the impedance become infinite, so preventing us from obtaining any reasonable measurement of the acceleration to which we are interested. Now let's see what happens if we consider the second option, that is, if we connect the voltage due to the charge distribution on the surfaces of the accelerometer to a voltage amplifier. I'm looking at slide 52, and you clearly see that in this case the output of the transducer E is connected to the positive input of the operational amplifier. The electronic network is again structured as a negative reaction whose output is the ratio of the two resistors R and R prime. One of the resistors is connected to the ground. In this case, we can say that the virtual ground principle can still be applied, And this means that the two inputs of the operational amplifier are at the voltage E, not at the ground as before. In this case, we cannot say that the input impedance is null, as in the case of the charge amplifier, the current amplifier, but as usual in all these kind of electronic circuits, the input impedance is infinite. To have an input impedance infinite will imply, will cause that the induction vector is null. In fact, the concept of electronic induction corresponds to the capability of a charge to exert an influence in the surrounding environment. But this is possible clearly if the conditions are favorable to this. To be connected to a circuit with an infinite resistance, with an infinite impedance, corresponds to have an opposition that prevents us from exerting every kind of influence in electronic terms, every kind of induction in the surrounding environment. So we cannot induce any distribution of charge, coming back to our transducer, in the surfaces of the transducer that we are using and considering. In other words, we can say that the D term must be considered to zero in the previously equations. This corresponds to have that the product of the dielectric constant times the electric field is equal to minus the product of H times the vector T, the vector of the pressures. So in the slide 52, you can see that we can write E equal to the ratio between H, T and epsilon with the minus sign before. And we can replace the content of T with the ratio between the force and the surface to which it is applied. So we have minus H that multiplies M, the acceleration A, divided by the electric constant epsilon multiplied by the surface A uppercase. The electric field will generate a voltage between the two surfaces of the transducer. This voltage is given by the product of the electric field itself times the length L, the size L of the transducer. We can write therefore V equal to minus L time E. The minus sign is due to the fact that if the electric field is oriented toward a certain direction, the law of the physics say to us that the voltage will be oriented toward the opposite direction. So we will have, by replacing E with the previously written terms, H time L time M divided by the dielectric constant multiplied by the surface A uppercase, all this multiplied with the acceleration. So again, we have a electronic or electric magnitude in output to the transducer that is proportional with the physical magnitude to which we are interested. The transducer is definitively linear. But we can go further into the details and we can observe that the term L divided by epsilon time A uppercase corresponds to the capacity that expresses the nature, the real nature of the transducer. So we can replace it in the formula with the C letter, and we can write H time m divided by c and multiplied with the acceleration. I repeat, c is a virtual quantity that represents very well the nature of the transducer, that is really a capacitor. A capacitor has a device with two conductive surfaces separated by a dielectric material.